friend, Mr. Kevin Kester.
Yeah. Good morning, everybody. Hey, it's a good morning, Kesley and Levi. Hey, it's a great honor, a very great honor for me to introduce our special guest this morning. Sonny Perdue is the 31st United States Secretary of Agriculture. Secretary Perdue served as the governor of Georgia, so he knows firsthand what service to constituents means. He's also one of us. As a veterinarian and a farmer, he is well-versed with our needs. So please give a big New Orleans welcome to Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue.
Kevin, thank you. Good morning. Well, good morning to you all. Wasn't that a beautiful rendition of God Bless America? That was great. I actually thought they may come out with, oh, the Saints go marching on. But I guess that was before the playoffs. But anyway, well, it's good to be with you all here today. I want you to imagine something. I want to tell you what I'm imagining something. I've got a big speech here that I could read. I read pretty well. But I'm not going to read that. I want us to imagine today that I'm at your kitchen table after you've gone out and checked the cows, fed them, come back in, had a cup of coffee with a visitor. That's what I want to do today. And let's just have a conversation. Is that okay with y'all? And we'll talk about what you want to talk about. You need to know that I get most of my life stories from grandchildren. Mary and I are blessed to have four children and 14 grandchildren at home from age 4 to 19. So they keep me on my toes. I was home over the holidays, and I think it was an 8-year-old. They love riddles and puzzles, and they love to stump their grandfather, who they call Big Buddy. I'm Big Buddy tonight to 14 grandchildren. And they said, we were talking about cattle, and we were talking about farming and everything. They said, Big Buddy, do you know how the hamburger introduces his girlfriend? I said, no. They said, meet Patty. So they, one more, and then I'll go on, okay? They said, what do you call a cow with no legs? I said, no. They said, ground beef. Okay, that's it. So that ought to fit with what your topic today about your business, and we're delighted to be here in New Orleans with you all, and I appreciate the invitation. And as I said, I just want to have a conversation really about some issues that I think matter to you and your industry. It's what you all have told us about, and meeting with your boards this morning and your leadership, and about issues that matter. We want to be responsive as USDA, and we want to hear from you. The only way we can do an effective job is to hear from you and what you all want to see with the USDA. And I'll close a little bit with our mantra of being the most efficient, the most effective, the most customer-focused agency in the federal government. We're serious about that. And to help us do that, we've brought in some people who are great leaders. We're great leaders in our own right. And they've agreed to come to Washington, D.C., to put their other lives aside and to come and to serve at USDA to help that. And one of those you know very well. He's one of your own, a cattle producer himself, former Commissioner, Secretary of Agriculture in Nebraska, Undersecretary Greg Ibach. So thank you, Greg, for your service. There you are. We kind of raided Greg and his colleagues around the country in Indiana and Iowa and other places with Undersecretary Ted McKinney doing our TREG program from Indiana, Ann Hazel, who'd been a former director in Indiana with Rural Development, Bill Northey with Iowa, and in our FPAC, yeah, Iowa, there you go. Bill did a great job there. Jamie Clover Adams from Michigan and Missouri, Fordyce, Richard Fordyce there. And now we've got the newest one is Matt Lohr from Virginia, who's an authentic farmer, heading up our administrator of NRCS. So I'm grateful for this team, and I think y'all ought to give them a good hand because they're doing a wonderful job in that area. You know, farming, you can't do it by yourself. You got to have good people around you, and that's what we try to do here. So I want to thank them for that. When I talked to the president, he asked me how our farmers are doing. I said, Mr. President, there are three things that farmers talk to me about all the time that's on the top of their list, and they're really expecting you to make a deal. Number one is trade. Number two is trade. Number three is trade. And trade's a close fourth, too. So, but he understands that, and that's what the long game that we're playing here in many of these destinations. You guys are so efficient, so effective, such good producers. You know we can't consume all the great product that you grow. We've got to export it. And we're looking at those export destinations now. I'll tell you a little bit about China. We just had some news this week. Obviously, they were in town with their vice premier and their leadership having detailed discussions with our U.S. Trade Ambassador, Robert Lighthizer, Secretary Mnuchin, and Undersecretary Ted McKinney was representing USDA at those discussions as well. Yesterday afternoon, I thought it ended very well. We were there in the Oval Office, and Vice Premier Huh came in with his team and read a letter from President Xi of China. It was a very gracious address to the president, and Vice Premier Huh also had some very kind things to say to the president as well. I really believe that we are entering a phase where both countries want to establish an ongoing relationship that's sustainable. And we've got a lot of work to do, obviously, as growers, producers. We want to sell things, and we want customers out there, but we want customers who operate by the rules. And most of you know, you've probably got your own brand at your ranches, and if you drove by your neighbor's farm and saw some cows out there in the pasture with your brand on it, you'd kind of feel a little funny, wouldn't you? You thought they were good neighbors, and you thought they were good customers and relationships, but your brand's showing out there in their pasture, and your fences aren't down, so what happened? And that's kind of what's happened in the relationship with China. The core fundamental things that need to be resolved or intellectual property, even in agriculture. You know the technology is growing rapidly in agriculture. In your industry, the row crop industry, and all forms of agriculture, technology is critical, and it's going to get even more critical going in the past. We've got to be good neighbors and treat one another's intellectual property just like we treat their real property in that way. Just like you don't want your cows over in your neighbor's pasture, you want what's yours to be yours and theirs to be theirs. You're going to compete with them, and you're perfectly comfortable competing, but we just don't want to steal from one another. So we got to get some fundamental reforms done between China and the United States. That's where President Trump is. That's where the long game is. He understands that. China's economy has grown to a great degree over intellectual property transfer, be it forced or be it theft. You probably remember the case of the Chinese nationals digging up corn seed in Iowa, and it's not right. And everybody's got to play by the rules. I told the president, I said, you know, farmers love to play by the rules. I think it's kind of the law of the land in that you can't go out and plant in August and think you're going to harvest in September. You got to do things decently in order, and you got to do things the right way. And that's the way trade is. We want people to do things the right way. And that's what the president is for the long game. And he never fails to ask me when I'm there, how are our farmers? Take care of our farmers. And to his credit, the president's given us a lot of liberty in USDA to do exactly that. And I'm very grateful for his leadership and his affinity. He's interesting in the fact that this is a fellow that grew up in the real estate market in New York City, but he has a genuine affection and affinity for the farmers, ranchers of America because I think he instinctively understands that you all embody that American spirit of hard work, entrepreneurship, risk-taking, getting up when you get beat down, and keep on getting up and keep on doing whatever it takes to get the job done. So I want to just tell you, he appreciates what you do, and he never fails to ask me how our farmers doing out here, and he wants a long-term win for U.S. agriculture. The good news was, I've got a little story from yesterday in the Oval Office. Vice Premier came in, Vice Premier Leo Huff, and came in, and he was talking to the president about different things, and he said, I need to tell you, Mr. President, we had a great dinner last night. I had a wonderful U.S. steak. And he said, I think our people would really enjoy more of that. So I was loved to hear that. So we want to make it where they can have more of it. Do you know that we opened up last year the China market for the first time, and then we got in this trade disruption, but beef is on the top of the list, obviously soybeans again, rice and other commodities, corn and others into China as a customer. But I think we need to be careful. What we're trying to do across the country, across the world literally, is to find a lot of customers that everybody eats. So what are they eating? They ought to eat our stuff. That's what we want to do. And we can't become too overly dependent on China as one large customer, maybe as we did in soybeans going forward. We want a lot of customers, and that's what Undersecretary Ted McKinney is doing around the world, places like Thailand and Philippines and Malaysia and Indonesia and India and Morocco and Argentina and other places like that that make a difference in you all's product going around the world, the EU. And you also need to know, when we talk about China, we haven't forgotten about Japan. I just had a visit with Ambassador Lighthizer this last week, and just checking in on credit, just checking in on exports and where we are in our negotiations there. I won't tell you directly. He affirmed to me he understands how important Japan is to our agriculture, particularly in the beef sector. We're working to get standards there, of international standards, of not these non-tariff barriers over sanitary, phytosanitary things done, and so we can get good trade with China. He understands the implementation of TPP through these other 11 nations are coming very soon, and he does not want the U.S. producer to be at a disadvantage when TPP comes in. So he's on it, and hopefully we can get a good deal with Japan sooner rather than later, so you all can start sending them some of that good beef and make them forget about Kobe, okay? So, good. Then we've got other places to go, but trade is a big deal. It's a big thing that we do on an ongoing basis, and I just want you to know that Ted and his team are really on it. Ted's traveling. He's in the Million Mile Club all over the world on an ongoing basis, and we appreciate that. And if they eat, then we want to be there, and that's exactly what's happening. So we appreciate that. Let me talk to you just a second about something else that might be on your mind. I think y'all have another term for it. I'll call it cell-cultured meat. Do y'all know about something else? Cell-cultured meat. That's a big topic that's had a lot of press over the last year, and it's really important to your industry. And I want to begin by the fact that, to talk about globally, between FDA and USDA, I think we are getting it right with the MOU that's going to be signed between the two agencies. Naturally, OMB Director Mick Mulvaney suggested an overall global reorg that we probably ought to have one food safety organization, and I don't disagree with that. But until Congress directs that, we've got to learn how to get along with the other agency that's in the food safety business along with USDA. As you know, the distinction, USDA has always had the protein sector. We've had the meat and the poultry and the pork, and we jealously guard that USDA stamp so consumers not only here but around the world value the brand of USDA certified beef. And we want to continue to do that. When it comes to cell-cultured protein, there are some scientific genesis of those things that FDA has some specific area in stem cells and humans and other things that they do. And so it's probably appropriate that they get started in the Petri dish in that way. But I want to assure you, folks, I want to assure you that when it comes to harvesting that, calling it a product for people to eat, USDA is going to be there guarding the safety and the labeling of that product to make sure consumers know where it's coming from. I'm pretty sure we've hammered that out. Congress had some interest in it. And, you know, the issue, though, is you've got to know your ultimate consumer. While you sell maybe to intermediaries like grocery stores or big retailers and other places, you know you can't really depend on them to defend your product because they're going to be with the consumer. They're going to be with their customer. You're a provider to them. They've got their customers, and they've got to go to what their customers want. So my challenge to you as an industry is get to know that ultimate customer. Go to that ultimate customer. Many of you are doing that in the farm to the table effort, locally grown. There's a big movement about that. But go educate your customers locally and globally over the products that you're proud to grow and serve. We don't have anything to be ashamed about in the U.S. beef industry. We have nothing to be ashamed about, and we ought to proudly tell people how we do it, why we do it, what we do, and let them know and open up there. No longer, folks, can we stand behind the cattle guards of our farms and ranches and say, we just grow it, y'all take care of it from here. People want to know more. You know there's a fairly active and aggressive animal welfare unit out there. They not only want to know what you feed it, what you put in it, what you might have vaccinated it with, what you injected it with. They want to know how you treated it, you know, during that period of time. We don't have anything to be ashamed about, so we ought to proudly open up transparently our operations and say, come on in and see. We think you will learn something about that. You've got to combat the misinformation on social media out here that's aggressive and alive with the facts. Nothing beats the truth. And you got to get people out there. Some people don't want to know the truth. I understand that. But many people do. Many of your honest consumers want to know the truth. And we need to tell them the truth. We need to be available. We don't need to be behind the curtain because that just leads to suspicion. So I want to challenge each of you on your own farms and ranches. Just be hospitable just like you are. Just bring out those kids, bring out those civic clubs, bring out anybody who will listen and visit and show them what you do, and I know you'll be proud to have them on your farm. I want to end that comment with one last thing about that, and I'm going to say something pretty definitive for me, and it's my opinion. I can, we can debate the facts, but we can't debate opinion. This is my opinion. In my opinion, regardless of technology, and it's coming, and the consumer is going to be the ultimate choice of that, but in my opinion, for Sonny Perdue, I don't think anything's going to be able to compare to that USDA prime rib medium steak. So thank you. They'll have to prove it to me. We'll have to prove it to me. So that's it. We'll be happy to talk more about that. And if you got questions, ask us. We'll be defending the right thing to do. Obviously, growing populations, we need it all. I'm kind of like energy. You know, bring it all on. If you got a better product, the customer will be the choice. I'm betting on you guys. And I think for the long term. And I don't think there's any concern about that. Farm bill, we were fortunate this year to have a farm bill introduced and passed in the same year. Congress worked very hard, but our USDA people worked very hard. It was my first farm bill, obviously, in that position, and we didn't know exactly what our role was going in, but we determined that we wanted to be advocates and advisors and consultants to Congress whose responsibility is to pass the farm bill. I didn't think we needed to give them a roadmap, but we needed to answer their questions. And I think we did that. In fact, our people at USDA answered over 2,000, they call them technical assistants, and members of the staff or the members of Congress would ask, What's the impact if we do this? What happens here if we do this? And our people all over USDA, from Greg's shop and other shops of FSIS and food safety and research and Forest Service, all those would give the impact that we thought of doing that. Now, you know that when you pass bills in Congress, laws, they can't be so specific. And they rely on the executive branch, our administration, to write rules and regulations that tell you all who have to abide by them what Congress meant in that way. And we're hard at that. We've had a skeleton crew, even during the shutdown, dealing with the implementation rules, and we hope to have those sooner rather than later because, as I told the president, I believe you all are rule followers. Clarity leads to compliance, and that's what we want to get. We want to get a clear rule and regulation out here that you can follow in following the Farm Bill and doing that. You got some good stuff in it. Your industry, along with the pork industry, was very instrumental in our protection area of vaccines and other things, and our friend Greg Ibaugh is going to be right at the center of that. He's the one that kind of gave Congress the proposal of the three-legged stool about how we can effectively use this money to develop health protection for the animal industry, livestock industry, going forward. So I'm glad Greg's there to help provide and design what this will be, but we need your help and input as well. And you also ought to know that Greg's at the tip of the spear on traceability. He's had a lot of history about that, and we know that we've worked on that for a long time and haven't come to that. So we would love to see some sort of decisions and conclusions over traceability, where we need to go with that. Remember the ultimate consumer. They're going to know where it came from. In Georgia, when somebody comes to town or when we meet somebody, what we like to say was, who's your mama? Who's your daddy? And that's what consumers are going to want now. They want to know who's that cow's mama? Who's that cow's daddy? That's what they're getting down to, and that's what we need to understand and about the expectation of consumers, and that deals with traceability. That many of our customers internationally are asking for those kind of things, and we've got limitations. So the better data that we can provide them, the better off that we can do from a sales perspective by telling them we don't have anything to hide. And speaking of hide, I just looked here on the front row. We got Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith right here. So, Senator, thank you for your efforts. And as a former commissioner of agriculture in Mississippi, I am tickled to have her on the Ag Committee, and she's going to be a stalwart there on your behalf, on our industry and ag behalf. So I'm glad to have a genuine friend in the business in the Senate. So thank you, Cindy, for being here this morning. So we want to know our customer. We want to give information and be transparent about that. The Farm Bill had some good things. It had some great things about conservation measures that you all need to know about and take advantage of and to do as well. Your trucking issues have been electronic logging devices have been kind of a thorn in your flesh for a while. To the legislature's credit, Congress's credit, they exempted the 150-mile rule. Some of these things with the federal motor carrier did not make any sense regarding livestock, whether it be cattle, beef, or other cattle, pork, or any of that. You just can't stand and keep those animals on a trailer resting for somebody for 8 to 10 hours in that way. So we've done our best to get DOT and the federal motor carriers to understand the unique nature of transport. Also, it happens with perishable vegetables as well going coast to coast. And I think they're finally listening. And I think based on Congress's interest in this and our ability to have a good relationship with Secretary Chow and the federal motor carrier people, I hope we can make continued progress to get long-term rules. We're working right now. DOT's working on rules, really defining and changing out these hours of service that hopefully will make an effort and understand that then when it comes to live animals, when it comes to perishable vegetables, some of these rules for health and safety have a contradictory impact on that. So I know that's been an issue on there. I want you to know we're working on that, and hopefully we can have some good resolution come prior to the end of the year. Certainly, you probably heard about our market facilitation program. More impactful some for some row crop farmers, but most cattle people usually have some type of grain and row crop production as well. With the market facilitation program, we had the payment there for tariff damage, but mostly I want to speak to you about our market access program, the money that the $200 million that we designated out of the $12 billion that President Trump committed to the farm economy for market facilitation over trade disruption damage. We set aside $200 million for market assistance programs. Now, I want to be really clear. These are partnerships. This is not handouts. This is working with industry. In fact, yesterday we announced over 57 different groups, collaborators, industries, sectors that were getting money, and how much of that $200 million over a three-year period. And what's the goal? To build our markets all over the world, to demonstrate the benefit of our products and build these markets wherever they may be, possibly where we've sold before, possibly where we've never sold before. So we need your help in that way. And when I say we need your help, when we ask our collaborators, there's $200 million and we want to give you this much money, but we're expecting you to match that. You know, we're just not going to give money. We're expecting a match in this money from the different sectors there. And frankly, folks, that's where does that money come from in the beef sector? It comes from your checkoff. Well, obviously, we've had some threats against our checkoff program, but I want to tell you, I told them, Cindy, I wish that we had a tax checkoff program where we could just decide whether we voluntarily wanted to pay taxes or not. That's what some people seem to think about checkoff, is that you ought to be volunteer whether you want to or not. That'd be great with taxes, but we need to all be in it together. If we're going to build the industry, if we're going to grow our markets around the world, we've got to use these funds in conjunction with public funds in order to build markets around. So we're expecting collaboration from the beef industry and every other sector that we gave money to, whether it's a plant, animal, or anything else, to participate and build leverage. We want that $200 million to just leverage up several times in order to go out and make a heavy onslaught onto the markets around the world for our market access program to do that. You know that Congress gives us money every year with our FMD and our MAP program. But with this $200 million over the 3 years, I feel obligated to go to Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith and say, here's the difference. This is what this $200 million that you all let us use, this is the different sales increase. And we're giving metrics. Had a pretty stern conversation with a group the other day before we agreed to give them money about how they had not been necessarily productive in the past about that. So I'm an ROI kind of guy. I want a return on investment because it's your money, both publicly, and it's your money as participating organizations there, that we want to make sure that we're getting the best value for the dollar in that area. So that's why checkoffs are important. That's why, so your groups can help to build industry worldwide and feed a hungry, growing world as we go forward. So I appreciate that. You all probably know that Greg and I have had about a 4 or 5 week vacation recently. Not really. Greg was deemed essential. He is essential, isn't he? But frankly, we had a lot of USDA workers there. It's pretty important. You know those processing plants can't work unless those food safety inspectors are there stamping that and looking at that, which is critically important, vitally important to our consumers. So first of all, I want to thank all of our hardworking USDA employees who went to work day by day, no whining, without paychecks for 3 or 4 weeks. And thank you. We had a skeleton crew at headquarters of the USDA, but we had people working in many areas. Greg Ibaugh is in charge of APHIS. The pests don't stop during a shutdown. The threats don't stop during a shutdown. His people were there at the border making sure that invasive species don't come in. We had other people doing important things. And frankly, I'm really proud of our folks and our officers were able to kind of arm wrestle OMB to the ground and let us reopen our FSA offices that were pretty important too. Some of you might have had a two-party check out there somewhere you couldn't negotiate, and it's pretty important to get your business done around the first of the year that way. So we were delighted they gave us the opportunity to do that, and we very much appreciate our people at work. And I, you know what I found when I got to USDA? It was like having 100,000 farm kids that just want to do good for agriculture, and I really mean that. And we've turned them loose, and we've let them go, and we've got a great spirit of serving agriculture in a customer-focused kind of way. And I can't tell you how proud I am. We don't bat 1,000. Now, you probably may have had, probably some of you could stand up around here today and say, well, you hadn't had a good experience. Well, tell me about it. You know, we want to know. I mean, we're interested in the individual as well. We think we're doing pretty good by the time most people tell us. But if you don't think we are, there's a website called usda.gov/tellsunny. So y'all take advantage if you want to and tell me what I need to hear so we can make sure. That's really from our people as well. They know I'm listening, and we want to listen to you, our customer, in that regard. So the shutdown was unfortunate. Most people feel that it was somewhat unnecessary and somewhat silly, and I'm going to probably enter into a little political ground here right now. I think it was a little silly. I think the American people expect our Congress and our administration to work together to get the job done. When people in the past who have talked about we need a wall, we need a barrier, we need there from President Obama to Leader Schumer to Speaker Pelosi, all in the past have talked about that. And simply because they don't want to give a political victory to President Trump, say no, no, no now. Even now, during this 15-week period, so I can assure you, having to get an organization like 100,000-plus people ready for shutdown is no fun, and it's unnecessary. So I call on the people who don't want to comply and cooperate. In fact, some people are on the record already saying, no, 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 no. That's not what American politics is about. People expect our administrations, if we're different parties, to compromise for the good of the country. Now, I talked about earlier, if you drive by your neighbor's pasture and you know your fences are up and you see your cows out there, something funny's going on. Well, let me ask you this. Why do you have fences? Won't you just let all the cows roam all together? Isn't that the right thing to do? Shouldn't they just kind of go, you know, all over and you go pick them out from time to time? Isn't that what we're talking about with border security? You got fences. Everybody's got fences. Nations have fences. And nations have barriers that help protect our national security. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to recognize, stop the silly politics, and make a difference that protects the national security of the American people. So. All right. I know a cattle prod when I see one.
No.
I grew up with cows. They might have been black and white, but I know what a cattle prod's all about. So, well, Kevin, thank you very much. Thank you all. God bless you.
Mr. Secretary, we certainly appreciate you taking the time to visit with us. And as a small token of our appreciation, and by the way, if anybody can see on the monitors, that's a great cow tie the Secretary Perdue has on right now. But we have a tie that we thought you might appreciate. It's got all our brands of many of our members, and we want to give this just as a small token of our appreciation.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Yeah.
breathe and adjust